This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is The Morning Run and you're here with Lynn and Shaoning. Now in about 15 minutes, we're bringing you the KLCI opening numbers as well as some of the latest corporate news. In the meantime, we are running a poll on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you, would you purchase Ramadan bazaar food online? Tell us why or why not. We've had just shy of 220 votes. There's an hour left to weigh in. 50% have said yes, 29% have said no, and 21% are still on the fence about it. Comment on the poll, let us know what you think. Right now, though, we are taking a look at some countries which are considering easing restrictions on movements, because cities around the world that have been under coronavirus lockdown for some time now are now asking, when and how do they end it? You know, in Europe, Italy, Spain and the UK, which are the countries that have suffered the worst in the region, have extended lockdowns until May. But Germany and Norway, for example, are now beginning to ease restrictions.
Meanwhile, in the US, President Donald Trump has said that states will decide when to reopen their economies because we've seen conservative protests in the US calling for a resumption of normal life. Of course, WHO has released guidelines on to nations as to when they should end this lockdown.
So disease transmission is under control. The guidelines are when disease transmission is under control. Health systems are able to detect, test, isolate and treat every case and trace every contact, and as well as when hotspot risks are minimized in vulnerable places. So for more on this, we speak to Benjamin Cowling, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the University of Hong Kong. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Ben. Can you hear us?
Yep.
Welcome to the show. So we previously spoke with you about a month ago as most countries were just beginning to impose nationwide lockdowns. How would you assess the effectiveness of those measures now?
I think they've done well in stopping the rise in case numbers and the rise in incidents, but there's still a lot of places where infections are continuing, epidemics are continuing, and the lockdowns are going to take a while before numbers get down to a low level, and then we can think about releasing those lockdowns.
And Ben, would it be fair to ask you what you think Malaysia's efforts have been like so far?
It's good. I've seen the numbers have not got too high so far. I think you could still do more testing for two reasons. One reason, so you have an even better idea of what's going on. And secondly, so that you can start getting ready for the exit strategy from lockdowns, in which you need to do a lot of testing, finding the cases, and then also tracing their contacts and finding ways that their contacts, if they were infected, don't pass on the infection, because testing alone is not enough. You need to also be able to stop chains of transmission from developing.
Now, some countries like Spain, Italy, and even the US are now claiming to have already reached their peaks. First of all, you know, can we really say with much confidence that any country is on the path to recovery? Are we perhaps speaking too soon?
I think it's definitely too soon. The only reason those countries have peaked in terms of their epidemics is because of the strict control measures and the lockdowns. And if those are kept in place, then incidents will come down, case numbers will come down to low levels. But if the lockdowns are released, we would expect resurgence in infections. And so the numbers will go back up again.
And several nations are beginning to lift restrictions, right, on movement. So are we ready for that? And what's your assessment based on?
I think we need a clear plan for how to get out of the lockdowns. And I don't think it's a good idea to just release the lockdowns and try and go back to normal, because if that happens, there will be a resurgence in infections. A lot of countries are now looking at test and trace as a way to get out of lockdowns, meaning that you do a lot of testing, you find the cases, and you stop them from spreading it onwards, and also need to trace their contacts to do that. But I'm not sure if that will be enough, or we also need to retain some elements of the social distancing measures that are already now in place, like cancelling mass gatherings, preventing mass gatherings, and maybe widespread use of masks.
And Ben, the WHO has also just released some guidance for nations looking to ease restrictions. So, for example, countries must be able to minimise hotspot risks, manage the risk of importing new cases. Are these measures sufficient, though?
I think it needs a really strong local response, particularly with the testing and tracing, as I mentioned. I think the other thing you just mentioned, the border restrictions, border controls would be critical. We've seen a number of countries have received a lot of imported infections from outside. So even if their numbers were low, once they start to get infections coming in from other countries, then it can really put a big strain on their public health system just to cope with those. And that, so the border restrictions may need to stay in place for a little while longer.
And are there any countries in the world that so far fulfill the criteria that the WHO has just laid out?
I think China has got over its first wave and is now worried about a resurgence in infections. We've seen a few cases in the last week or two of local outbreaks in different parts of China. But I think in China, they're ready to get on top of it because they have testing, they have very good surveillance, and they can do contact tracing using all of their population surveillance and facial recognition and all of that. So I think they're in a better position to keep numbers under control in China than maybe other parts of the world.
But one of the issues that we have about this lockdown is the impact it has on the economy. So I know you're a scientist, but you know there's always this balance, right, between health, life, death, and the economy. So at what point does it make sense to actually leave a lockdown? Because the cost to the population is also great in many other ways.
No, you're right, and that's a really difficult decision and a really difficult balance for politicians to find. I'm a public health scientist, a public health expert, and so I will always go on the side of saving people's lives. But I understand that there is also an economic cost to doing the lockdowns. And I think what we need to think about really carefully now is how to get a little bit back to normal, but at the same time, keeping some of the social distancing measures. And those will be disruptive, but how can we minimize the disruption? How can we find the right balance between protecting people's health, but also keeping the economy going?
And are you concerned about certain countries, like, for example, Indonesia or even India, which have huge populations and practically really it's going to be difficult for them to practice any form of social distancing?
I think they're doing some things already, but it is going to be more difficult to control coronavirus in some parts of the world than others. And as we know, like when some countries get their numbers to a low level, if they then reopen, we would expect cases to come back in from elsewhere in the world. And that's happening to China right now, that they're reopening and now people with infection are coming back into China from outside. And so I think at any point in time in the next few months, even the next year, there will be hotspots in different parts of the world that will pose a risk to other places that have got numbers under control.
Now, you touched on the subject of testing. And in terms of testing availability, you know, what there are multiple test kits available now on the market. Is there one that is cost-effective, broadly available for all countries to access, and are they sufficiently reliable?
So there's the PCR tests that are the most commonly used ones. They're not particularly cheap at the moment because the chemicals used in the test are a little bit expensive, and that does reduce the availability. And then the machines to do the tests are available in many parts of the world, but not everywhere. So I think there's more to do. I mean, certainly in many countries, there's a need to expand testing capacity to get more of the machines that can do it, and also to get more of these chemicals. Even though they're expensive, it is really important to be able to do a lot of testing.
And what about testing for asymptomatic patients? Is there a different one?
I think there's not a different one, but I think it's more difficult to think about doing a lot of testing on people without symptoms for places that don't even really have enough tests to test the people with symptoms. And asymptomatic cases don't seem to be the most important in terms of spreading infection around. It seems to be the people who get sick and then pass it on. And if we can trace their contacts, and that's the people they may have already infected by the time we discover them, if we can trace them, we don't necessarily need to test them. We just need to find a way to put them in quarantine so that they can't continue to spread infection into the community. I don't think it's necessary to test a lot of people who don't have symptoms.
And what do you think about some of these protesters, especially in America, who say who argue for this herd immunity kind of logic? Does that make any sense?
I think what we're going to find is that in places that are now testing blood samples in populations, for example, New York, in cities in Europe, in Wuhan, in China, what we're most likely going to find is that up to 10% of the populations in those cities have been infected. And so if you think about Wuhan, if it was really the case that maybe 10% of people in Wuhan had been infected, the people arguing for herd immunity are basically saying they'd like Wuhan to go through what it went through another four times to get to 50%. And I don't think that's really a very good idea.
And Ben, you mentioned that asymptomatic cases perhaps not as important when it comes to the spread of the virus. Why is that the case? You know, what kind of research is there to back this? Or is it just because the asymptomatic cases are smaller in proportion compared to the symptomatic ones?
That's right. So there's actually two different types of asymptomatic cases or detections. The first type is a person who gets infected and never shows any symptoms at all. And that's only maybe 10, 20, 30% of people who get infected. They may be able to spread a little bit in the community, but they're not the most common type of infection. The other thing, though, is that some people, when they're infected, will start to become infectious before they develop symptoms. So it's not exactly asymptomatic. It's more like pre-symptomatic infectious. And those people actually are able to spread infection. There's a number of studies now saying that that is quite an important contributor to transmission in the community. And that really indicates the importance of tracing in the test and trace strategy. So in other words, we test, we find people who are infected, and then we need to bear in mind they may already have passed on infection by the time we did diagnose them. So we need to look for their contacts. That's the people they may have infected, and put those people into quarantine before they have a chance to pass infection on a further step. So in other words, we have to get ahead of the virus rather than always being one step behind.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Ben. And that was Benjamin Cowling at the University of Hong Kong School of Public Health with a lot of very interesting information there. I particularly like his distinction between those who don't show symptoms at all throughout the duration of their infection and those who do actually become infectious before starting to exhibit symptoms. It underscores the importance of contact tracing that even our Ministry of Health is now conducting on a wide scale.
Yeah, it's quite encouraging also his remarks on Malaysia that we're doing quite well. But as usual, we do need to have more tests. This is only, I guess, phase one of the COVID-19 battle that we are facing. We need to do also more contract tracing when we do find any clusters.
And right now we are heading into the 9 o'clock news bulletin, but don't go away. After that, we're taking a look at the KLCI opening numbers as well as some corporate news for you. So keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.